Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Please visit audiblepodcast.com/smartest for your free audiobook download. From the salubrious confines of Southern California's most fantastically popular and redolent with comedy, hip, groovy, on the edge, new wave, pushing the envelope fucking comedy room, the Nerd Melt Showroom, here behind the Nerd Melt comic book store, right here on gripping Sunset Boulevard, where the human zoo continues apace outside. As we sit here in comfort and safety, the neon light burning a hole into our retinas. Once again, we conjoin and we convene. If you're out there in Proopcast land, thank you for joining us once again. If you're on the tube, right on. If you're driving around, this is an awesome time to light one up. If you're at the gym, this is a groovy time to slip outside and take some, I don't know, Percocet or something. Kind of make the end of that gym a little funner. Just don't put the weights over your head unless you're being spotted and shit. We've been all around the country since the last time we talked. We were in the Republic of Texas, which is like America, but different. There's Austin, which is, I guess, the Berkeley or the Madison, Wisconsin, or the whatever you want to call it, of the Austin of Texas, which means there's two cool places to go and not everyone wants to shoot a road sign. And that's what makes Texas awesome. Then we went to Houston and Dallas, and Dallas, I think you'll find it, is a dust storm waiting to happen on a bayou. Oh, no, that's Houston. I get them confused. We stopped at a truck stop in the middle of nowhere to get donuts and whatnot, and no one ate donuts. But I bought a dozen donuts. I was on a bus with the Who's Line guys, and we stopped at this truck stop that was Leviathan, right? It wasn't called Leviathan. Although it would have been appropriate if it had been a biblically named bus stop inside Texas or whatever. Leviticus bus stop. Stop ye not here, for the lizard of the lot shall be upon thee, and suction of thy fine wand, and thou shalt find redemption, and then and coins of gold will be theirs, and there is a shower upon the premises. The thing about truck stops is you can always find a camo hat, and you can always find an awesome mirror that says excellence with a picture of an eagle on it. And you can find headbands, and you can find chewing tobacco, which I believe truck drivers chew and other people in Texas chew, even when they're with a person of the opposite sex who they intend on kissing later. And yes, that part's the shocking part. So there's no firearms, but there is a dazzling array of motor oil. I wouldn't know one motor oil from another. Now, if you put a bunch of Courvoisiers up there, I'd be like, oh, an 11-year-old? Scoff. If you put jars of weed up there and one said, you know, Misty Springtime Dragon Tail, and the other one said Jerry Mathers, you know, Dank, I would be like, I think I know which way I'm going to go on this. With motor oil, it's all one and the same to me. Anything that comes out of the ground that's made of ancient animals, I'm for. I think it's their last hurrah and their last laugh on us. Sometimes I'll just step on the gas and burn a stegosaurus in tribute to some of the great American capitalists and Arab capitalists that have extracted them from the ground and let us know how important it was that they lived hundreds of millions of years ago. I dare say we will not be as important to subsequent generations. I don't think you'll find people stepping on the gas in 750 million years. Are you going to... Oh, you're not texting. You're live tweeting. If you're live tweeting, Greg's sexual magnetism was penetrating. Is that 140 characters? Then just write O-O-O-O-O-O-O-O-O with an exclamation point a lot of times and then a bunch of stars. Hashtag, this was awesome. Phew, I need a fag. So I'm in this truck stop in Texas, right? Just having the time of my life. I had the time of my life. No, I never bought so many stale donuts before. And I swear. And they don't have Krispy Kreme in Texas. They got Dunkin'. And Dunkin', of course, leaves off the G because a G is an insult to real people. Only a Ponzi, Harvard-educated, French poetry-reading, bouquet-gathering asswipe who orders foreign wine would say dunking a donut. Everyone else, the rest of us, God-fearing, lovable people who love kittens and our families and want to make cookies on a Sunday afternoon and look at the night sky and wonder about our place in the fucking universe, go, Dunkin'. So I bought a Dunkin' Donuts. I brought them on the bus. No one ate them but me. Because I wanted my lower jaw to be like a fucking chameleon in I want to look like a sea iguana that Darwin found. Just, I want to store all the carbohydrates and sugar I eat right below my chin. That's where they're going to go. That's where I'm keeping them. That's where I put them. That's how I feel. I lean up against the bathroom right outside the men's room, which is extensive, by the way. And yes, there's always someone doing something awful. Truck stops are the place where men get rid of what's bad inside their bodies. And I'm sorry to bring that to you, but it's true. I'm speaking as if I was an Indian who once lived in that area. And I just learned English, and I'm doing a horrible, horrible dehumanizing impression. I was outside the men's room, and you know, hands in my pockets, whistling, talking to dudes as they went by, as you do. What's up today, bro? Ham, nice day, right? Just twiddling my thumbs, making some scrimshaw whittling. And there's a picture behind me of a cow. Not like a drawing or a rendering. Well, there's no renderings in here. Usually the Nerd Meld is replete with an unsuccessful comic book artist's pictures of what Cthulhu looks like, or Alan Moore's Worst Nightmare, or an acid-induced fucking Frankie Miller, you know, mini-headed Hydra Valkyrie-type lady thing with a giant belt that sprouts magical rays and, you know, that kind of thing. A zillion ovaries giving birth to a zillion fertile ideas, giving birth to a zillion sweatier men who should, you know, kind of not wear a t-shirt. In any case, tonight there's nothing on the walls here. We're left with but the black French literature of the early 18th century feeling here. In any case, on the wall was a picture of a cow. And when I say a picture of a cow, I mean a photograph of a cow. A photograph of a cow in a frame that was hastily thrown together by a straight person because no homosexual wouldn't have cropped it better than this. There would have been margins that were different, and the subject matter might have not been a bovine. And it wasn't a female cow, which are called cows, I believe. I'm not a zoologist, although I often, as you know, assume the guise of one in my travels. Why, that's a very sick Shetland pony you have there, I'll say when I'm in the Hebrides. Wouldn't you say when you're in Shetland? That's too obvious. There was a picture of a steer, a Texas Longhorn steer, on the wall, a photograph in a bad frame. And I took a picture of myself next to it. And my wife, Jennifer, texted me back and wrote, "Why do people who live amongst cows want to have artwork of cows?" Which I thought was a very profound thought at that point. Why? If you're surrounded by fucking cows, wouldn't you put a picture of a bitchin' disco in Rio de Janeiro? You know what I mean? Something you can't get, a baguette. You know what I mean? Like, put a picture on the wall of, like, some shrimp or something. I don't know. Something fun that everyone likes, you know. A black girl in charge. You know, something Texas doesn't have. A yield sign that doesn't have 50 bullet holes in it. So we went through there, and then we went through Dallas and then Houston, which is on a bio. It's not Dallas. Dallas is landlocked, as far as I know. And yes, everybody was like, "Oh, there's Dealey Plaza over there. There's Dealey Plaza over there." It's like, you know what? At this point, mystery unsolved. I'm stamping this one. In any case, I was in Washington, D.C. after that. And D.C., as you know, is the epicenter of evil because it's where everything that's concocted in this world is cooked up in dark rooms with gross older men. And I made some mistakes, and this is the corrections, the errata, the contraltos, the contrata, the castrati, and all the things I'd wish to rectify at this point. Of course, if you wish to write me, which people do because I make many, many mistakes, as I've said on the show many times, to err is human, to err is to pronounce it correctly, and to prove cast, to prove cast is divine. Smartest.aspecialthing.com is where you can and send me questions for the show. And by the way, we answered a few, not on this episode, but on a previous episode that you haven't heard yet. How does that fuck with your time warp Mobius strip? How could you have answered them on a show we haven't heard? Cuz, think about it. The Fortress of Prubitude exists so that I may broadcast from there errantly in between times meeting you all live. And I did one in between, and I think that one might go out next, but I'm going to tantalizingly leave you dangling like a small rhesus monkey in a laboratory right before the eye makeup is applied. If you wish to contact me poisonally, it's fanmail4greg@gmail.com. Yes, I do answer it. Does it take forever? Yes. In this instance. However, here's two recent ones regarding the Washington District of Columbia a podcast. This is from Neil. Neil writes, I realized there were not huge numbers of women in black. Because I asserted that the movie The Last Waltz had one black person, Muddy Waters, playing live on stage with them, and one woman, Joni Mitchell, playing live on stage with them. I had, of course, forgotten about the pre-recorded parts of The Last Waltz. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Okay, thank you. One person nodded solemnly. Everyone else went, Greg, we're quite young. Where can we find this on our phone? Is there a Last Waltz app that'll hip us to what happened in the antediluvian times when dragonflies the size of goats swirled around the sky of Los Angeles and the shit that you think is pertinent might be brought into our own lives? The Band was in The Last Waltz, and it was a movie by Martin Scorsese, who's still alive and wears giant glasses now and makes movies for children and stuff. And he was cool. Anyway, I realized there were not huge numbers of women and black men in The Last Waltz, but to say there was only one does a mild disservice to Joni Mitchell. Emmylou Harris, Mavis Staples, Cleotha Staples, Yvonne Staples, Pop Staples, Muddy Waters, and Pine Top Perkins. They'll be fine, but just wanted to respectfully point that out. A minor quibble against literal hours of cheers. Thank you, Neil. Yes, the entire Staples Singers are there and sing Take a Load Off Fanny, right? And I've told you the Mavis Staples story. That's from a previous Proopcast where my wife and I met Mavis Staples and her sister Yvonne in London. And the Scottish DJ who was interviewing Mavis went, so you had an affair with Bob Dylan when you were 21 and he was 19. And Mavis Staples went, and turned fucking completely bright red. And Yvonne turned to my wife Jennifer and went, mm-hmm. And if I could do an impression of the wig Yvonne was wearing at the time. It was early in the morning, as the Gap Band said, and Yvonne's wig was not on straight. Wherever they were staying, the Dorchester, the Grafton, wherever they were staying in London, Yvonne had not spent that last extra moment before leaving straightening the wig. Mavis Staples was awesome beyond all measure. And as you know, Mavis Staples has that insane voice. The Staples Singers are immortal and will live forever. And yes, they were in the movie and they do a bitching version of The Wait, it's called, the W-E-I-G-H-T. And Pop Staples is still with them then too. Jesse writes, you know what, Jesse, let me say something. You're a friend and you're a good friend of mine, but lately something's changed. It ain't hard to define. You've got yourself a girl and I want to make her mine. And now you're, yeah, okay. I'm so growing a mullet during this portion of the show. I met Rick Springfield. This I don't know if I've ever told on the show. We were doing a show in Vegas with Drew Carey and the Improv All-Stars, and I was there to carry the dead weight of the cast. And I adore Drew beyond measure, as you know, but often Drew and the group are like, I don't know, how do you describe it? A boxcar of appliances, and I'm a Polish guy with a grip in my teeth pulling them down a giant railway track. They're called the Extreme Proops Games, and what they are is when your friends who are richer and more successful than you need your fucking help to make them funny. I'm joking, of course. I'm joking! Really? 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 I will kitten whip this crowd so fucking hard, you'll feel the wrath of my orange fucking pussy come down upon your head. Oh yeah, I will. If I can't make fun of Drew, who can? That was rhetorical. Because I know what all of you, I heard your interior monologue. Well, members of his immediate family, people in intimate relationships with him, those who are his actual social peer, those who are more famous than them. I think you'll find there's a great deal of people who can make fun of Drew, Greg. No, I love Drew. Like I said, I was joking about all of that. It was my pleasure and honor to be playing in Las Vegas in the room where there's some magic show that David Cassidy was the host of, and then Rick Springfield was sitting in for David Cassidy. It was, you know, I can't remember the name of it. It wasn't a Cirque du Soleil one. It wasn't French. No one hung from a ribbon and no one showed their cooch. So you knew it wasn't, and no Beatles music played, and it never was a bummer. So, but I can't remember the name. Magique or Fantastique or Canlaquiaro. I can't remember the name of the show. I think it was, you know, like, boom. I don't know what the name was. So we're doing our show after his, and we're on their stage, which is in exactly the wrong room for improv. Improv needs to be performed, well, never. But when after never, after improv needs to be performed never, you need to be up close and see people's faces and be able to hear what they're talking about and whatnot. This was a giant spread out stage that went really wide, and the crowd was raked, and it was just fucking crazy. Rick Springfield's backstage with his dog, and he was so good looking. He looked like David Bowie in you remind me of the Babe. What Babe? The Babe. Labyrinth. He looked like David Bowie in Labyrinth. He had that bitching of hair. He had Elf King hair with a mullet. And he was nice as could be. And I had seen him. That's the saddest part of this story. I had actually seen Rick Springfield at a Rick Springfield concert at the Concord Pavilion in like 1983 or something. Why, Greg? Why? Every week it's Ornette Coleman and fucking Christina Amphlett. Oh, you're always dropping shit on us that we have no idea what you're talking about. But yet you went to see a Rick Springfield concert? The tickets are free. I know your next question, and let me anticipate the answer. Was there enough dope to make it entertaining? Kind of. Jesse says, no, 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 no. Yeah, and he did play that one. Maybe twice. Hi. Hi, Jesse. They're a big fan. I don't know if that means I'm a big fan or just big fan. Oh, where is it? Over there. Oh, my God, that's huge. I can feel the breeze coming off of that giant fan right now. One thing you're assured of in the nerd meld is there are no big fans or air conditioning or any kind of conditioning of any kind. But there are two issues I feel I need to bring up concerning your latest vodcast. First of all, Skip Spence. I mentioned Skip Spence. Skip Spence made an album called Orb, was it? Or, O-R-A, and or is it just O-R? I think it's O-R-E. And Skip Spence was, I said he was in the Jefferson Airplane, but he wasn't. He was in Moby Grape. And Jesse has taken time out of his unbelievably rich pageant of a life. This is all we have time for here. As you know, my life is the same pageant. I have listened to Skip Spence's album, and it's amazing. Skip Spence is like Rocky Erickson or Syd Barrett or any of the rock stars you can think of that we, technically, on the other side, would say lost their mind. This is only because they didn't want to talk to rock journalists. And rock journalists, as soon as you don't want to talk to them, say, you've gone insane. Now, the fact that some of them were institutionalized, notwithstanding... I think you'll find many journalists to be institutionalized, as should many people in general. But we just can't anymore because we don't have the time. As Amy Winehouse said, I ain't got 18 days. There are two issues I feel need to bring up concerning your latest vodcast. First of all, Skip Spence was not in the Jefferson Airplane. Hyphen, he was in Moby Grape. I think you'll find that required a colon there. Jesse. And your brother, Frank. Secondly, and more importantly, comma, you referred to the drummer for the Doors, comma, John Densmore, as Jim Densmore. I did. And in that regard, I failed almost utterly several times. Sorry, but I'm a huge Doors fan. Period. Bye. Period. Bye, Jesse. Bye, Greg. Bye. Bye. See you. So long. Bye. Where's your car? It's outside. Which one is it? Oh, that one. Really? The one with the rag coming out where the gas cap used to be? Thank you for that, Jesse. His name is John Paul Densmore, not Jim Densmore. I could have sworn that the USA Today obituary said Jim Densmore, and I'm sticking to that shitty excuse. I also inferred, or stated outright, rather, that I could think of very few bands that did not have a bass player besides The Doors, because Ray Manzarek recently passed, who is swirling in the heavens tonight as a giant purple ribbon, is playing with his left hand the bass part and his feet as well, and his right hand is playing the melody and all the fills. And of course, I can't get away with saying that there's no other band with a bass player. One person wrote me, I can't remember who, and said Sid Vicious couldn't play at all, so I think you could say the Sex Players didn't have a bass player. My answer to that is, who cares? Who else would wear a lock around their neck on a chain and a t-shirt that says Viva La Rock and shoot up in their eyeball before the show? I think you better weigh your fucking, you know. It's important in a band that people be cool Not for this crowd here tonight, but other crowds that are listening will agree with me, and they'll be nodding thoughtfully as I dispense this unbelievable chunket of wisdom in a beef and a tomato-flavored packet. Johnny Thunders of the Heartbreakers, Johnny Thunders of New York Dolls fame, and one of my wife's favorite rock stars, was recruited to be in the New York Dolls because he was walking down the street wearing a leather jacket and bitchin' hair that went in every fucking direction 3 feet in the air. And at that moment, and I believe he had a guitar strapped on his back and was simply walking down the street. And the guys in the New York Dolls went, "Will you join our band?" And he went, Sid Vicious was asked to join the band because I think they all hated Glenn at a certain point. It wasn't so much that Sid could play. He just knew them. He was best friends with Johnny Rotten, and he looked fucking awesome. Who? When you think of punk music, it's spiked hair, a fucking no shirt, fucking, you know, razor blade marks across the chest, heroin in the eyeball, bad playing, and stomping someone with fucking giant boots while you're drinking a beer and smoking a fucking cigarette. And that's what Sid provided, okay? Playing's overrated. As is singing. If everyone was a good singer, we would never have Bob Dylan. So think about it. Right? If Bob Dylan sang like, "Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you." If he sang like Rick Astley, he wouldn't have been a star. The fact that he went, that's poetry. Right? And I said, "Yes." That's poetry. That's poetry. Anyone can fucking sing. Demi Lovato can sing. You know what I mean? He was in Moby Grape. Secondly, and more importantly, oh, I already got that part. Here's the band with no bass player. This is from Lee in Portland, Oregon. Surprise that someone in Portland, Oregon would have taken time out of their day of eating bacon-flavored fucking everything and going to Voodoo Donuts all day and drinking an ocelot-flavored licorice pine nut arugula-scented microbrew and riding their bike and attending the I'm Wearing a Driving Cap Beardy concert to write me that there was another bass player less band. Slater Kenny, Greg, period. Slater hyphen fucking hyphen Kenny, comma, capitals, Greg. That's the whole letter. Lee in Portland, wow. Wow. What can I tell you, man? Mia culpa, mia maxima culpa. I had forgotten in my haste to brand one band, a band with no bass player, I had forgotten the majesty that was Slater Kenny. I hope that in your world where tonight you're listening to Slater Kenny and perhaps even a little Kim Deal, that you can take time out of wearing your flannel shirt and feeding the reptiles that live in a glass thing in your room. And forgive me. Reach out with your heart. My heart's reaching out to you right now. Look, feel it. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, my heart actually goes boom, boom. It doesn't make a weird shoofy noise. Fushy, swooshy, slooshy noise. It goes boom, boom. Thank you for your letters. I appreciate that. If it had ended on a funnier note, I would have appreciated it more. I'm joking, of course. My wife and I are in Brooklyn, and there's no sleep till there. Shall we do the ads up front, or we should start the show is what we should do. There's been way too much falderol, and tomfoolery, and Chuck Woolery. Throw me on a jam there. Pick out a groovy jam there, Matt, and let's do some Audible. We don't have a lot of sponsors because I as you know, no, I want to save that one because his obituary's coming up. I'm sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to shut you down like that. But don't ever fuck up or embarrass me again. Matt Belknap, who you'll know from the Jimmy Pardo Never Not Funny show, and of course, Doug Benson's many myriad podcasts and my podcast as well. One of the geniuses of podcasting. Audible.com is the internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, providing digital versions of tens of thousands of audio. I'm waiting, Matt. Audiobooks for download to your computer. Oh. I am broadcasting from Amsterdam. I'm on a barge in the middle of a canal. My name is Pelf. That was our first jam tonight. It's called Everything's Cool in Colchester. Here's our second one. I hope you're enjoying the ecstasy you took tonight. We don't play we play atonal non-rhythmic music that's just noises that sound like Jupiter is exploding in your ears. We have no idea what melody or funk is or anything like that. Thank you for listening very much. I hope you're having sex upside down now. I hope you're having sex upside down now. How many chameleons do we have in the audience listening tonight? All right, raise your paw. Uh-oh, chameleons don't have paws. They have little weird claws with three things on them. What is this? Is this on my iPod? What is this? Oh, it's Beasties. It is on my iPod. Good choice. Listen whenever and wherever you want, just like the podcast you're listening to right now. Audible has 75,000 titles to choose from. Every genre, Audible has it covered. Get a free audio book download when you sign up today. This is a call to action and should be emphasized or repeated. Get a free audio book download when you sign up today. Audible! When you don't feel like reading. John DiMaggio. For a minute, it sounded like Jump Around, and I thought, I really don't have that group on my... Who was that Irish group of guys, the Paddies? Jump Around! What were they called? House of Pain. Because, indeed, they did. They dealt... houses of pain, whole condo complexes of pain. I'm the cream of the crop of the cream. No. Some quotes before we get going tonight. A lot of people who drank here in town, and that's what the theme of tonight's show is. We're talking about Hollywood tonight and Hollywood swinging because we're on Sunset Boulevard. Now, I'm from San Francisco, as you know, and no, I'm not. And... then I moved to London, where everyone thinks you are, because you might as well be. And then I came to L.A., where, you know, you wouldn't say it if you were. And, yeah. Wow. So I've got some quotes here tonight about Hollywood. I was talking about it earlier this week with people. The thing about San Francisco that makes it cooler than L.A. is not that we're cooler than L.A., other than we are. It's that San Francisco's tiny, and people can give themselves a kind of a rectal exam from where they stand, which they often do. But L.A.'s too spread out. The deal in San Francisco that makes it different than L.A. is we don't lay on our horn when you're letting an older woman cross the street in front of you. Here in L.A., you'll stop to let an older woman cross the street. She's in a walker. She's about to die. And you stop so that you don't kill her. And the person behind you will go, and then go around you in a fury. While texting. That's what makes L.A. different than San Francisco. Here's the quotes. Charles Bukowski, the immortal poet. Some people never go crazy. What truly horrible lives they must live. Indeed. F. Scott Fitzgerald. And yes, his name was Francis Scott Fitzgerald. And yes, his ancestor was Francis Scott Key, who wrote the worst anthem in the history of anthems. If you have to put or in a sentence instead of over... I mean, well, let's talk about the lyrics to the national anthem. Or the land of the free. Barf. barf and never stop barfing. But wasn't it written while he was watching the shelling of Fort McHenry in Baltimore in a boat just offshore while the English were fighting us during the War of 1812? And then as the sun rose, he saw Old Glory with its however many stars on it and its circular. Yeah, yeah. I've heard the fucking story. Yes, all that's true. And he wrote 18,000 stanzas of the song. There are a million stanzas to our national anthem. We don't even know the first fucking verse, okay? Because it's a blowy song. There's no question, there's only two candidates for National Anthem of the United States. Living in the USA by Chuck Berry. Because he says, I'm so glad I'm living in the USA with a hamburger sizzling on the open grill night and day. One. And two, Living in America by James Brown, because he goes, Detroit City, hey! That's an anthem. That's an anthem. If there's rockets bursting in glare and whatnot, no. This is what F. Scott Fitzgerald said in a letter to his daughter in 1940. Advertising is a racket, like the movies in the brokerage business. You cannot be honest without admitting that its constructive contribution to humanity is exactly minus zero. Nathaniel West, who wrote Miss Lonely Hearts and The Day of the Locust, which is one of the most trenchant books about Hollywood you'll ever pick up, and possibly one of the most depressing moments you'll ever spend. Art is a way out. Do not let life overwhelm you. When the old paths are choked with the debris of failure, look for newer and fresher paths. Art is just such a path. Art is distilled from suffering. I love that quote, and I also feel that there's no town that inflicts suffering on you more than this town. Well, Calcutta. Raymond Chandler said, if my books had been any worse, I should not have been invited to Hollywood. And if they'd been any better, I should not have come. Oh, my God. And this is what I love about Hollywood. Raymond Chandler wrote The Big Sleep in a booth at Musso and Frank's on Hollywood Boulevard. He wrote the book The Big Sleep in a booth at Musso and Frank's in a very moist booth. At Musso and Frank's. And he said that. He did not write the screenplay to the movie of The Big Sleep. William Faulkner wrote it. And Howard Hawks phoned him and said, Bill, I can't figure out the movie. And Faulkner went, I don't fucking know. Call Chandler. And Chandler went, I don't know how it fucking ends. That's the best part of The Big Sleep. In a mystery, there has to be a mystery. You don't have to answer the mystery. Like at the end of Lost, when there was all those people and shit. I'm joking, of course. I never watched Lost in my life. But I would have if I was uncool and lived at your house. There's been a lot of miscarriages of justice lately, and you've noticed them in the news. This is by Raymond Chandler, who wrote nothing but detective novels. And by the way, didn't start writing till he was over 50. Over 50! There's hope for all of us. The law isn't justice. It's a very imperfect mechanism. If you press exactly the right buttons and are also lucky, justice may show up in the answer. A mechanism is all the law was ever intended to be. Fucking A. As long as people administer the law can never be administered judiciously. That's me. To lift your spirits, because I realize everything's always a bummer with me, Marcus Cicero, who was a senator and defied Caesar intensely and detested Mark Antony. And when Antony and Caesar, when Caesar took over and when Caesar was assassinated, he wouldn't participate in the assassinations, but he never supported Antony afterward. And Antony, as retribution toward Cicero, had his tongue and hands cut off and nailed to the wall of the Senate outside. Cicero was also the leading lawyer in the city of Rome and loved his family quite a lot, which made him unique among Romans. Romans tended to be as pervy as fucking producers at Sony. And their houses were full of lots of people of different persuasions and every proclivity that would give you anything you wanted at any point. Cicero loved his wife and daughter intensely. Cicero said, if you have a garden and a library, you have everything you need. Fucking A. Faulkner. This is from the Paris Review. And I loved this one because I think it really speaks to the human condition. Time is a fluid condition which has no existence except in the momentary avatars of individual people. There is no such thing as was, only is. Who thought Faulkner was a Buddhist? Nobody. Time is dead as long as it's being clicked off by little wheels. Only when the clock stops does time come to life. He said in The Sound and Fury. And lastly, in Absalom, exclamation point. And yes, you know how I detest exclamation points. And even for William Faulkner, who won the Nobel Prize, I'm going to extrude this exclamation point. I know why he did it. I still decry his usage. There is that might have been, which is the single rock we cling to above the maelstrom of unbearable reality. Fucking A. Every goddamn day. So me and my wife was in Brooklyn, right? And we were doing the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Will the Brooklyn podcast come out, Greg? I shouldn't think so. It was destroyed by the gods. It went 17 minutes and then something fucking happened. And the rest of it is unretrievable as far as I can figure. However, when we were in Brooklyn, we went to dinner afterward. Is this going to be more salient than the actual podcast itself? I think so. We went to a restaurant in Brooklyn that can only be described as a hipster hangout because it had a back garden, which reminded me of all the places in San Francisco on Haight Street that have a back garden out in back where the food was unfathomably awful, but we have a back garden. So you can smoke dope while you're eating here and still fucking eat our shitty food. And we invite you to do both those things. I can't remember the name of it. If I could, I'd tell you. We went there, and on the menu was, first of all, the waitress came over, and she looked like, how do I describe this? She looked like Agnes Martin, the artist. She was wearing a lesbian flannel shirt, and she had an unspeakable hairdo, and she was nice as could be. And she went, hey, all right, yeah. And we went, like, way, all right, cool. And then she's like, handed us the menus and went, any questions? And I'm like, you don't even know how many questions I have. You don't know where to begin. One, and two, you can't answer the questions I have. What's the capital of Ecuador? Why are we here? I have loads of questions. On the entree portion, or the appetizer portion, sea urchin. Now, I'm not above sea urchin. I will molest a mollusk. Are sea urchins mollusks? Or are they... What are sea urchins? They're like... They're in the same family as sea cucumbers and stuff, right? Like they have... inside a sea urchin, as you know, is a series of bristly spines. And inside a horrible hard shell. And then you crack them open and you crack out their ovaries. And that's what you're supposed to eat. Oh, yeah. Talk about no women's rights for female sea urchins. We strip sturgeon and sea urchins of their ovaries, and we eat the eggs out of them. Any case, that was on the menu as an appetizer, so we ordered it. And at the time, it sounded hip and groovy. When it got to the table, it was like something you'd find in a tray in an operating room. It was quivering and revolting. I put it in my mouth, and I swallowed it anyway because, God damn it, yes. I was paying $27 for this fucking appetizer, and I'm going to fucking eat it. So I swallowed it down, even though it was like giving fellatio to a 70s porn star. A wiggling, squiggling, wriggling, horrible caterpillar of food. That needn't have been. You could have cooked it. You could have done 1,000 things to it. That's how pretentious this restaurant was. They were serving sea urchin. By the way, ramp and quinoa and goji berries and kale, stop it, okay? Stop it. What happened to turnips? Turnips are delicious. If you slather turnips with butter and pepper, they're like you fucking go, oh my God, I didn't... I thought I didn't like turnips. But I like them. Okra and zucchini, fuck you. Fuck you, okra, and fuck you, zucchini. This is my personal opinion. Zucchini and okra are like making love to a lizard or something. Worse, like making love to an amphibian. When you put okra in your mouth, I'm like, no, no, no. Why am I loving up a newt? I don't need to love newts. Why are these cave salamanders from Kentucky invading my mouth? Quinoa is like bullshit polenta, okay? Polenta fucking gets it done. Polenta can form a cube. Polenta can form a square. Polenta's delicious. It's like mush, but it has everything that grits have. And more, right? Polenta's Italian grits. There's no nutritional value, but if you slather it with shit, you go, fucking, this is off the hook. Quinoa, have you ever eaten quinoa and gone, fucking, oh my God. I'm taken to the highest plains of the Andes. You know what my next view is? The eagle god taking me to a land of gold. No, you've never said that when you ate quinoa, because it fucking sahahucks. It blow-ho-hos. Ramp? No. Ramp is fucking collards with a fancy name. No one here's ever eaten collards. My mother's from Mississippi. I've eaten collards. Thank you. One person up front's eaten collards. Everyone else is from California. Collards? Do you mean like spinach greens-ish? The thing about Southern cooking is, aside from shooting a road sign and loving the Lord, if you're going to cook collards, you're going to put hock in it or bacon. And therefore, the flavor factor of the vegetables is multiplied exponentially. With quinoa, you just go, this is drier than I thought it would be. And I think a hamster would go, p-dee. If you eat collards and they have ham hocks in them, you're going to go like, fucking, I've never swallowed a chunk of fat and loved it as much as I did just now. I love my grandma. That's what you'll say as a tear pours out of your eye. Quinoa's never made anyone cry. So she brings us wine. My wife orders a bottle of wine. And the wine was foamy and tasted like soap. And I always feel like if you're going to order a bottle of wine, they should go like, you should know that if you order this one, the white Springfandel Kibjum prancing goat from fucking, you know, Lederhosenville, that it's going to be foamy and taste like fucking soap. White wine should taste like a fucking finger snap, crispy. Right? As soon as you drink white wine, you should go, oh, straight from the tree of life, I pick me a plum. You should never have a sip of white wine and go, foamy. And then, oh my God, what's with the aftertaste? Am I in a service station in Dothan, Alabama? Am I in a truck stop in Austin? There's a picture of a steer. Wow. When you go to Musso's on Hollywood Boulevard, they would have none of this pretension. They serve steaks cooked on a charcoal broiler. They have celery that's stuffed. Remember stuffed celery? No, Greg, we don't. If you'd lived when I'd lived, you would remember stuffed celery. They would take a stalk of celery and in it put cream cheese mixed with pimento so that it was pink and orange, and then stuff it in a celery stalk so that when you ate it, you went, this is salty and cream cheesy and crunchy and everything I need because I'm kind of drunk. Stuffed celery is the thing that dreams are made of. Because you go crunch and then like, did my arm just snap? No, that was a portal to a new universe opening. Every time I hear the crunch, a fucking purple opalescent fucking door flings open and I slide inside like I'm an eel penetrating the entire ocean. When we booked a table at this restaurant, the woman on the phone with my friend goes, David Cross was here last night. I love David, but he's not my Guy Fieri. I don't go Diners, Dives, and Drive-Ins with David Cross. The stars ate at Musso's and Frank's. Humphrey Bogart ate there. Do you think Humphrey Bogart ever went like this? I'll have some rape. Ramp, I mean. How's the quinoa tonight? I like quinoa with goji berries. I don't think you should order the goji berries.
Those, you don't know where they've come from in Tibet.
By God, sir, if there's a thing I like, it's a man who won't order goji berries with his dinner, sir.
Rick, order me some ramp. I feel a vitamin D deficiency inside me.
Did you ever notice in the old days no one had a vitamin D deficiency and no one was gluten intolerant in the old movies? You never saw Claudette Colbert go, oh, I'm gluten intolerant. I couldn't possibly have a hot dog. When you go to Moose House, it's like 1945 always. It was opened in 1919. Charlie Chaplin and Douglas Fairbanks evidently held a race from the studio on horseback. And the loser had to buy dinner. Who's going to race down Hollywood Boulevard now? Chris Brown? You know what I'm saying? No one's going to order the beaten on hose platter when they get to fucking Moose House. It was so glamorous then. I really can't get over it. And everyone's such a hurry here. I was talking about people leaning on the horn. Why are you passing me? And why are you trying to kill me when you're going down the road on my street? There's no more show business. Where are you heading? The rooms full of Joshes have gone. They're like the Stegosaurus. They've picked up and moved on. The smaller warm-blooded mammals are using their phones and making TV a non-live event right now. Stop trying to kill me while you drive around the corner. It's not that important that you get there before I do. When you go to Moose's, it's like, first of all, everyone wrote there. Bukowski, Chandler, Hemingway. Moose's were writers came to have late breakfast. They open at 11. How civilized is that? They open at 11. The presumption being, you've woken up at 10:30 and gone, fuck, where's my shirt? They serve flannel cakes. And writers used to go there and write notes on paper. As I've said on the show before, paper is something people used to write on before they had tablets. An electric tablet that had all their friends in it and their personality contained inside. Sorry, that one makes me laugh. You can order flannel cakes, but they stop serving flannel cakes at 3. What are flannel cakes, Greg? They're exquisitely small, thin, unbelievably crepe-like pancakes. But I can get them with hash browns so that the carbo load overcompensates for the amount of whiskey I drank that morning. I believe that's why flannel cakes are served as an option there. It's so romantic. It's so artistic to order flannel cakes at 12:30 in the daytime. No one ordered a smoothie in 1945, if you know what I mean. Right, George McCready didn't walk in and go, yes, I'd like a smoothie. Lionel Barrymore didn't come in and go, a smoothie, yes. Robert Mitchum didn't drink smoothies. He drank hard liquor out of a shot glass. Robert Mitchum, how can I put this? Boffed babes? I realize that's insanely sexist, and yet you get the romance of what I'm talking about. Because it wasn't as if babes didn't volunteer. He was, after all, Robert Mitchum, and his chest was like a bison. Enormous and heaving like a pony keg. Robert Mitchum had bitching rock and roll hair that hung down over one side of his head and a cigarette hanging out on the side of his mouth. His house was the medical marijuana dispensary. Charlie Chaplin used to sit in the window there and try to cage free lunch off Musso because people would be walking down Hollywood Boulevard and he'd riff with them and they would have a constant gun-running argument over whether he should be served lunch for free, and Chaplin would go, people are coming because I'm sitting here, and Musso would go like, fuck you, pay for your lunch. Now there's no one walking down Hollywood Boulevard that you want to riff with, if you know what I'm saying. It's tourists who are wearing fanny packs who have indulged, and people with fucking DNA molecules on their head made of tinfoil going, I used to rule this planet when it was underwater. Thank you. That one made me laugh a little bit. Let's get to the boring preacher part, and then we'll fuck off into this good night. Wow. Oh, I've lost that page there. Kittens. Oh, no, there it is. Here we go. This is about New Orleans. under fire from anti-abortion protesters this week. We were talking about New Orleans last week on the show, and we're going to be playing there. Where are we going to be playing, Greg? Thank you for asking. We're here tonight. Then we're going to be in at the Cine Family on June 11th for Lifeboat, Hitchcock's immortal classic, where a bunch of people are in a lifeboat for 2 hours in a movie. And as I've said, how will Hitchcock make that entertaining? Hitchcock could make anything entertaining. He could have made Red Whips the movie. And you'd have been like, don't look on the last turn. Yeah. We'll be in the Soho Theater in London the 18th of June through the 23rd of June. We'll be in Amsterdam on the 27th of June for the longest podcast in the history of this show. This will be the Space Case podcast, or Space Cake. Did you say Space Case? Yeah, I did. It's 1974 again. Hey, far out. You're acting like a real airhead and kind of a space case. And why don't you get off my case? We used to say that in the old days. Get off my case. Evidently, we were all in a Chandler novel. We'll be in Norway in Oslo on the 29th of June, and I've said quite enough about Norway. This is what I have to say to the people of Norway and adjoining Scandinavian countries. Build a fucking wooden vessel and join me. Put a dragon's head on the front and fucking row as if your life depended on it. When you get there, I will be wearing a spiked helmet and nothing but pelts. I'll have animal fur all around me, and we're going to Canada. And we're this time, we take it. Bar Lubitsch on the July 3rd, the July 3rd. On the July 9th, we'll be back at Bar Lubitsch. We could have gone to those, Greg, and not have to pay the $10. I know. It's free at Bar Lubitsch. But it costs $10 here because, well, look at the air conditioning you get. There's a whole room of graphic novels out there. On the 25th of July, we'll be in Galway in Ireland at the Galway Festival. The 31st through the 15th, we'll be at Edinburgh at the Edinburgh Festival. On the 3rd, 10th, and 15th, we'll be doing podcasts. Those will be 1 hour long. Isn't that a bit brief for you, Greg? Yeah. I can barely say my name in an hour. On the 6th of November, we'll be in New Orleans. Have you booked that yet? Is that settled? Have you signed any deals? No, but it's New Orleans. So for me, it's like I have to bite my finger until blood comes out and then write on a piece of vellum. Yeah. We're also going to be secreting Napoleon back to France. Oh, yeah. There's a lot to get done in New Orleans. In Denver on 9/11. And that's a great day to play Denver, I think. Denver is such an awesome town. We have T-shirts. You can buy them. They're called Power Sheaths by me. What they do is create an oscillating cosine that attracts all the other integers that you want in your life. If you wear a power sheath, the people that you wish to repel will stay away from you. And the people that you wish to be in your sphere of influence will glom onto you like an iridescent butterfly and copulate with you endlessly. What am I offering? Unbridled ecstasy. Really? How much are they? I don't fucking know. I've never gone on the website. But thank you for laughing at that. Everyone else went serious on this shit. I haven't gone on. If you knew me, you'd know that that's true. Diane is here tonight. Diane, would you mind standing up? This is a Kittens McTavish t-shirt. Right? Am I wrong? You walk into a place with that on, and people are going to go like, I'm ordering blueberries to go on my pigs in a blanket. That's right. I'm going to go fruit and sausage. Because when the blueberry hits the sausage, that's the moment of apotheosis. Thank you, Diane. Thank you. You're very welcome. Have you found, Diane, that when you wear that t-shirt, all the things I promised have come true?
Most certainly.
Thank you. That was unsolicited and unprepared. What was that quote you read about advertising early on in the show, Greg? What am I, CeeLo? You know I'm cool. Under fire from anti-abortion protesters this week, targeted by members of the state legislature, Planned Parenthood supporters remained resolute Wednesday. They would build... This is from the Times-Picayune in Louisiana. a 7,000-foot square health clinic on South Claiborne Avenue, no matter what. The $4.2 million project has become a flashpoint in the abortion debate as the first Planned Parenthood clinic in Louisiana that will offer the procedure. The state legislature passed resolutions earlier this week meant to thwart the project's progress, or the project's progress. And anti-abortion activists held a large rally Monday. This is from about a week ago. An event in stark contrast to Wednesday's ceremony to kick off the clinic's construction. This is a rabbi. Rabbi Edward Cohen chastised the clinic's detractors, including Archbishop Gregory Amond. Although Cohen only alluded to him and did not name him, Amond spoke against the clinic at Monday's rally, calling abortion a violent act. No one has a monopoly on truth, especially in a free society in the 21st century. No one, no church, no synagogue, no mosque, no archbishop, no rabbi, no imam bespeaks the official faith of the United States of America. City Councilwoman LaToya Cantrell was the only elected official to speak at the event. Councilwoman Cynthia Hedge Morrell was on the list of speakers, but was unable to attend. Planned Parenthood State Director Melissa Flournoy said, blah, blah, blah. The Vice, adding to a councilman, read a statement. The new facility will give women, this is what you need to know. Louisiana, I hate to say it because it's true, is a second world country, as is a great deal of Dixie. We here in California sit on our ivory throne and talk about them and judge them. The thing is, they're humans like us, and there's no difference, as I've often said on the show, between red and blue. There's only purple in this country. My relatives come from the south of the United States. Louisiana has been abused and horribly maligned. Every hurricane that's happened to them, every oil spill that's happened to them, everything that's happened to them, they didn't deserve. Louisiana gave this country everything. Right? According to the most recent data available, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in 2011 ranked Louisiana first in the nation for syphilis and gonorrhea, third for chlamydia, fourth for AIDS. The Greater New Orleans area ranked fifth for AIDS. Baton Rouge was first. We're in a crisis in this city. I have no doubt that standing with Planned Parenthood will address the disparities. This is the woman from Planned Parenthood, Ms. Cantrell. 50% of all pregnancies in Louisiana are unintended. Then why are you protesting against a Planned Parenthood if over half of the pregnancies are unintended? Don't you see what Planned Parenthood does? It's not against the Lord, and it's not against your belief system, and it's not going to ruin your life. It's going to enrich women's lives, black women who are poor in that area, because it's going to provide them with what they need, which is resources to deal with their own health issues. These legislators that are trying to block the building of the Planned Parenthood facility, if their sole interest is to decrease abortions in Louisiana, preventing Planned Parenthood is not the avenue to do so. If you want to get rid of abortions in Louisiana, they should put a Planned Parenthood on every street corner. Louisiana, and then this is a following story that I found in the Times-Picayune. Louisianans can now apply for a lifetime concealed carry handgun permit after a piece of legislation. Yes! People were protesting in the streets of New Orleans over a new Planned Parenthood being built. And yet in Louisiana, you can buy a lifetime concealed weapon. In other words, the Second Amendment is more important than any amendment that would protect women's lives. The Second Amendment, which protects only guns, and guns only kill people. There's not another thing guns do. Guns don't give birth to babies. Guns don't enrich our artistic life. Guns don't speak to the heart of our soul. Guns are a final and horrible solution to people's idiotic fury and arrogance, right? Guns aren't something that make everyone think, man, I really want to hold hands with all of humanity and connect with my fellow people. Guns disconnect us from humanity. And yet, the legislature of Louisiana, sponsored by a Baton Rouge area state legislature, was signed by Governor Bobby Jindal on Thursday evening. The bill is the first gun regulation bill to be signed by the governor during the 2013 legislative session. The bill is the first piece of legislation for Representative Barry Ivey, Republican Central, one of the newest lawmakers in the state capitol, who ran on a platform of pro-life, pro-gun, pro-family. I can't think of anything less pro-life than a gun. If you think abortion is anti-life, you're kidding yourselves, because pro-women is what abortion is. Abortion is a part of women's health care. We've said it a million times on the show. Pro-gun, that's not pro-family. That's white guys taking their dick out and swinging it around in a last pathetic attempt to attract attention to their fucking shitty agenda that has no pertinence anymore in the world we live in. The lifetime gun permit will cost $500 and will require the carrier to complete a training course every 5 years. Wow. If you offered women the chance to pay $500 and have a lifetime health care pass that allowed them to go, yeah, right? 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 I mean, what are we fucking talking about here? This is men wanting to carry around an artificial dick with them. Women don't want to carry an artificial uterus with them. They want men to understand that their uterus has to be dealt with in a world based on reality. You'll find that the factual world that we live in is often based on reality and not on faith. In France this week, the first gay marriage was broadcast on live on French TV. The socialist mayor of Montpellier, Hélène Mandru, conducted the ceremony announcing, "I now pronounce you united in marriage." The announcement was met with applause from the guest as Frank Sinatra's Love and Marriage was played. You can't have one. You can't have none. Ms. Mandru said marriage was about the same rights for everybody. Well done, France, for legalizing gay marriage all over their country. I'm going to skip to the end here. I had a thing I was going to read about the Giants, because the Giants have had a strike going on. When I say the Giants, I mean my team from San Francisco. They've struck last week, the hot dog vendors and the bartenders and everyone who works at the new ballpark in San Francisco. They haven't had a raise since 2009. In that time, the Giants have won two world championships. Charles Johnson is the main owner of the Giants. He is worth $5.7 billion. Billion. The Giants say this is between the group that hires the people who make the hot dogs and the vendors. They, of course, are in the middle of this. They own the team. They have a billionaire owner. At any point, you could give them health care and a raise. That's all I'm saying. I know I've talked about this a lot on the show about owners of baseball teams and owners of sports teams, but they really are unconscionable wing-wangs. And this is my team, the team I love, the team I root for every day. And I'm ashamed of them for not being a little more attentive to the people who take two-hour bus rides to the park to serve hot dogs and stuff like that. If you have $5.7 billion in your personal fortune, surely raising their wages after 4 years is not that big an issue. In any case, moving on and to the end, and here we go. A couple of obituaries, because there's people swirling in the sky tonight made out of a giant ribbon of yellow and orange stars. Jean Stapleton, who played Edith Bunker on the show All in the Family. A lot of you are young. When I was little, and as I talked about, All in the Family ran from 71 to 79. Jean Stapleton was an amazing figure on the show All in the Family. It was a gigantic television show when television was really important. And they talked about rape, they talked about abortion, they talked about terrorism, everything on that show. It was a very issue-oriented show. Norman Lear produced the show. Stapleton won 3 Emmys out of 8 nominations for her role as the lovable dingbat, wife of blue-collar bigot Archie Bunker, Carol O'Connor. She talked like this and had an amazing voice and was quite a good singer. And is in the movie Bells Are Ringing and a lot of other movies. Jean Stapleton is part and parcel of why the show All in the Family was popular. If it had just been Carol's bigot character who hated blacks and hated Mexicans, hated everyone, she provided the human aspect of the show and was a lovely, lovely actress. It's not a tragedy. She was 90 years old. She didn't die at 43. But it is something that we all should note, because in this day and age of television, where television is regressive and not particularly involved in taking on the challenges and all of the issues of today. All in the Family was. And that's what makes the 70s so bitchin', as I talk about so often on the show, that Jean Stapleton was an actress in the 70s and that she was recognized for how bitchin' her part was as Edith Bunker on the show All in the Family. She's in heaven tonight playing the piano with Archie Bunker. And like that. Musician Marshall Little recorded Rock Around the Clock. He was the bass player in Bill Haley and the Comets Band. Without Rock Around the Clock, there's no fucking rap music. There, I've made a giant leap. I'll leave you to do all the work in between. Rock Around the Clock's the first rock and roll song written by a white group that made it to the top of the charts, who is doing black people's music. Without them, there's no rhythm and blues. Without them, there's no rock and roll. Without rock and roll, there's no psychedelic. Without the psychedelic, there's blah, 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 blah. Clarence Berkley Jr. Now you can play that jam. Clarence Berkley Jr. was in the Five Stair Steps, and they did a song called Ooh Child, and this is how it went. They're a family, and they all came from Chicago, and they were funky most. Mm. Yes, I'm going to dance. Fantastic. Clarence Burke is a luminescent strip of gigantic, iridescent, lime green stars in the heavens tonight. Ucha. Later on, he had a group with his brothers, and they did a song called All Night Thing, if anyone remembers the funky days of the early 80s. Excuse me. Here's our last story, and then we'll go. This is from the Guardian newspaper in England. I think it's from Gawker. Ancient water. Gas that bubbles out of the floor in a deep mine has a chemical composition that can provide the food source for microbes living in a deep ancient fluids underground. The subheadline is 1.5 billion year old water, don't drink it. Evidently in Utah, they found a bunch of water that's a billion and a half years old, which means it's slightly older than when I wrote my first joke. My first joke, I collaborated with a trilobite as it wiggled through the antediluvian seas. Nearly 1.5 miles beneath the Earth's surface, scientists have discovered pockets of water that have remained in isolation. The ancient water bubbling up from the floor of a zinc and copper mine near Timmins in Canada's Ontario province looks crystal clear, but it would not make a cool, refreshing drink. I love writing. It's warm to the touch and much saltier than seawater. That's such a coincidence. Everything that comes out of me is too. Someday, yeah, we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful sun. Someday, when the world is much saltier. The water is also rich in dissolved hydrogen and methane gas, as well as noble gases. And their isotopes. The chemical reactions of the gases could be built up enough energy to support life that has been hidden from the sun for more than a billion years. A team of researchers report in a study published in the journal Nature. Well, I subscribe to Nature. Not the journal, but the actual Nature. That to me is amazing beyond all. You know there are animals that live in the rocks in Australia that are billions of years old, that the earth actually contains stuff from when it was created all the time, and that this water is part of it too. When people talk to you about the new, and Justin Bieber has a baby, and all the shit that's going on in the world, and they just fired Nicki Minaj, remember that we go back that far and that we were in that pool a billion and a half years ago. Was it this not funny a billion and a half years ago, Greg? I think you'll find my mitochondria rocked your fucking world. 1.5 billion years ago. A team of British scientists developed a way of telling the age of water. I can't even get my mind around that. I can barely tell the age of where the fuck I am at any point in my life, much less the water I'm drinking. By measuring how many isotopes of noble gases had built over time, they concluded the water's 1 billion to 2.6 billion years old. Well, that's giving yourself some fucking leeway. If I'm not mistaken, and I don't do math very well, that's 1.6 billion years leeway. I would love that kind of fucking giant target to aim at. 1.5 billion years? Okay, I think I could hit the target then. The ancient water was trapped in a network of fractures in granite-like rock that's also billions of years old. It is as old as 2.6. It could have been trapped at the same time the rock formed. Back then, the entire area was covered by ocean waters, and the floor of the mine would have been the ocean floor. The lead author of this study, Greg Holland of Lancaster University, thinks the discovery of this ancient water and its potential to support life. Hello again, I'm back. My name is Puff. This has been the Smartest Man in the World, Proofcast. Thank you for visiting me tonight. May every page that you turn be a satchel page. May every bell that rings for you be a cool Papa Bell. My name's Greg Proofs. I wish you nothing but joy.